liberty and justice for all.
All right. We'll have a roll call. Tanya, Kenya, roll call, please.
Good morning, President Bishong.
Yes, here.
Vice President Waggy.
Here.
Board Member Arnold.
I'm here.
Board Member Bright.
Here.
Board Member Compton.
I'm here, but Tanya, we can't even hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Still can't very well.
I know. I'm having a little bit of technical issues, so sorry about that. Board Member Davis.
I am present.
Board Member Gibson.
Here.
Board Member Moreno.
Here.
Board Member Ortiz Legg. Board Member Paulding.
Here.
Board Member Pease.
Here.
And Board Member Strong.
Here.
Okay. Our legal counsel, Nina DeGrante, has an announcement.
Good morning, Chair. Due to the coronavirus and in accordance with the governor's executive order in 2920, relating to the Brown Act and the convening of public meetings, some of the Brown Act regulations and rules have been relaxed to allow the RTA to have this meeting today via Zoom. A recording of the meeting will be available, and the public is able to participate in this meeting by calling in live, emailing, or leaving a pre-recorded message.
Okay. And thank you for that, Nina. And I'm going to also ask the board if they could, as we go through the meeting today, if you could state your name, including when you're making a motion and a second, so we can make sure that the minutes reflect everything properly. With that, I'm going to open up public comment for items not on the agenda today. So every effort's going to be made today to include all public comments into the record, but due to time limitations, some comments may not be included, but we're going to work to try to do that today. And this is for items not on the agenda. So if you'd like, please raise your hand. And I believe Mr. Greening, I will always start with you, Mr. Greening. So take it away.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening. Good morning. Glad to see you all here, including the ones who had a late night. And you probably saw my correspondence relative to the mask considerations. And the greatest concern I would want to raise here orally is simply those who have to wear them all day. You know, some of the studies I've been reviewing, the decrease in oxygen and increase in carbon dioxide not only affect health, and I'm very concerned with the health of all employees, but also could affect alertness. And so I want to be sure that is being monitored and that people, especially bus operators who do need to wear them, and I would question the need, but those who do need to wear them now have opportunities to take them off when they're on break and not be penalized for it. In any event, the other thing that I just received after the deadline for getting written comments in was the information from Prodaris, which I'm not sure when it'll be before the board members. Jeff has already responded quite constructively to it. I would just add a personal note that the founder and CAO of that organization lived in this county from the ages of 11 to 16, has relatives and friends here, and is quite familiar with our local area. So that's just a sort of a side note. Anyway, thank you for the opportunity to comment, and I look forward to a good, productive meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Is there any other public comment for items not on today's agenda? If you'd like to speak, please raise your hand and I will see you pop up. I don't see anybody else so that would like to do public comment for items not on the agenda. So we're going to close that public comment. We're going to move on now to the consent agenda. And so this is asked for public comment on consent agenda items only. So these are consent agenda items. Anybody who would like to speak on the consent agenda, please raise your hand and I will recognize you for 3 minutes. I don't see any hands. Mr. Greening, would you like to speak on this item?
I'm fine with consent. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, Jeff, go ahead.
Real quickly, I just want to mention that under item agenda item A9, declare Paso Robles Dial-A-Ride vehicle surplus. I have reached out to the city jurisdictions, and two of the cities are interested in acquiring those vehicles, actually just transferring the vehicles at no cost. They can use them as staff cars for their public transportation program. Right now, one of the programs has a very, very old minivan that's wheelchair accessible that we'd like to replace it. And the other jurisdiction uses as a Honda staff car, and it's not accessible. So if they have to do an emergency sort of backup, that vehicle's not accessible. So we're recommending that those vehicles be transferred to the cities of Atascadero and to the city of San Luis Obispo.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Jeff. Mr. Strong has his hand.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move approval of the consent agenda items A1 through A11.
Okay. Is there a second?
This is Ed Waggy. I second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second, and nobody would like to pull anything. So I think we're good there. We've had public comments. So we have a motion by Mr. Strong. Mr. Waggy has made the second. And so this is a roll call vote. Tanya, if you want to take it from there.
Board Member Strong?
Aye.
Board Member Waggy?
Yes.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Bright?
Yes.
Board Member Compton?
Yes.
Board Member Davis?
Yes.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member
yes.
Moreno? Board
yes.
Member Pauling? Board
yes.
Member Pease? President
yes.
Pichon?
Motion passes. So we are moving on then to the information agenda. Item B1 is our next online, and that's our executive director's report. So Jeff Straw, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be quick here, no more than 10 minutes, but I do want to just give an update on some of the things that are affecting the agency and to let the public know some of the things that we're working on. Obviously, what we're spending a lot of time on right now is the COVID-19 response and recovery. A great piece of news here is that we work with the County Department of Public Health, and they authorized our frontline employees to be eligible for vaccinations. We've had 70% of the bus operators and operations supervisors who have received the vaccinations. Many have already received their second vaccinations. And the reason for that is we provide a lot of transportation, particularly on the runabout side, for people going to medical appointments, dialysis, those sorts of things where those persons are very vulnerable. So we're happy for that. It provides some herd immunity within our organization as well. So the rest of us are anxiously awaiting our turns, but those of us who aren't eligible. But it is the bus operators, the technicians, bus washers, we call them utility workers, as well as our operations supervisors. So far, we haven't had any service disruptions, but there has been sort of a malaise, which is pretty common. After getting a shot, you may get some flu-like symptoms for a day or so. So we have had some absences because of that, but we're working very closely with our staff to cover those. So far, we've had 10 employees since the onset of the pandemic who have tested positive. All have recovered. We've had a few with some lingering malaise. It hasn't been severe, but we've had a few people that had some lingering effects from the pandemic, from the disease. I continue to serve on the county's vaccination task force. It's very helpful. We get information, real up-to-date information about what's going on that we can share with our staff and with our riders. That meeting actually starts at 10:30 today, so I'm going to miss the beginning of that meeting. Other issues in terms of the COVID-19 response. Next slide, please. As we've been talking, at least through the SLOCOG meetings, the CDC on January 31st issued a new directive for all transportation modes throughout the country that they have to wear a mask, the riders and as well as the employees. It also clarified some of the things that we it made it a little more strict. We used to permit a face shield without a face mask, but now if you do wear a face shield, you still have to wear a mask. So that's something we've implemented as part of that. As Eric mentioned, Mr. Greening mentioned that persons who are required to that can't wear a mask, that guidance is still not clear to us, so we're certainly erring on the side of caution, and we want to make sure that people who don't have the ability to wear a mask, that we won't force them to wear one. As we get more information, we're still waiting for information from the Transportation Safety Administration. TSA is the agency who's implementing this. We certainly will provide information to our riders and to our employees. Next slide, please. I want to honor one of our longtime employees in the South County area. Paul Lockett was hired 15 years ago at South County Transit. He's a wonderful person. I think it's a Scottish accent. It's really great to talk with him. But he's a very, very engaging person. I think his coworkers certainly love him, and every rider I've ever talked to and on his bus have always, said, "Hey, give Paul kudos. He's a great employee." So I also want to recognize that he's had 13 years of collision-free driving. So we're really, really excited to have somebody as safe and as engaging as Paul on our team. So someday when we get back to regular meetings, we'll be able to bring these folks in and we can honor the person and the employee of the quarter in person. But for now, we'll just honor him virtually here. Next slide, please. We had a retirement of one of our longtime bus technicians, Fred Carlberg. He was with us since we started the services in-house. He retired about a month and a half ago. We hired Luis Trejo as a new technician, so we want to welcome him to the team, as well as David Alm. David's in our bus operator training program right now, so we expect to have him. It's a six-week training program. We hope to have him ready in about four more weeks. We did have to, and we've been talking about this issue of, as more and more people are coming back onto the transit system, with the limited capacity we have on the buses, we know there's going to be a tipping point where demand outstrips our supply. We've been noticing that the bus on the Route 9 433 departure from San Luis Obispo to Paso Robles has been reaching that capacity, in some cases has been exceeding it. So in order not to deny service, we have added the shadow bus. We're not calling it an express. It's just another bus on that route to spread the load out. We're continuing to monitor the riders on other buses too. We've got real-time information that allows us to watch that information and analyze it. At least weekly we look at it. Another thing that's a real disturbing thing is one of our runabout vans that was parked in the Paso Robles yard was somebody stole the catalytic converter. I just heard in the news yesterday that several vans from the Paso Robles school district were hit last night as well. It's been sort of another pandemic we're dealing with here. Not really a pandemic, but it is something that's been happening a lot across the country, and it's so bad that there's a back order on the catalytic converter. So this bus has been out of service for over 2 weeks. We still don't have it. So the bus has been sidelined because of that. We're working with our cohorts to see what they're doing to try to prevent it. The challenge is these vans are a little bit taller, so somebody doesn't have to jack the vehicle up to steal them. The other thing is it's parked right next to a loud roadway, so nobody's going to hear a Sawzall, battery-powered Sawzall, just, saw through the thing. So it's something we're keeping an eye on. We've ordered a deterrent device that we will weld onto the exhaust system to try to keep people from doing that. We have cameras out there. Unfortunately, we weren't able to see anything at this case, but we're looking to use that as another deterrent, and maybe we can modify the cameras on there. Next slide, please. In terms of marketing, we submitted a joint coordinated joint plans grant application to Caltrans last week for a sustainable communities grant. This is to redo the short range transit plans for the region. This is the last year for our current short-range transit plan that was adopted in 2016. Same for San Luis Obispo Transit. We did coordinated ones last time in 2016. Atascadero and Paso Robles, the North County transit plan was done in 2012. It expired in fiscal year 18-19. So we really believe doing them all together will help us coordinate our planning, particularly on the capital side, because, as we start transitioning towards the zero emission and bus requirements. We need to get the, we need to be all on the same sort of coordinated page on how we move forward with that. I think it's also important for us to look at COVID. Obviously, COVID has really impacted our ridership patterns, and they had been changing prior to that. So, you know, since the 2016 short range transit plan nationwide, we've been seeing some changes. So this is a good chance. We hope we're successful in this. We have a backup plan if we're not funded with the Caltrans one. We have some other funding, some formula funding we get from the federal government that we want to use to do that. So stay tuned with that. We hope to hear back in June whether or not we're successful. If not, we're likely at the same time announcing that. We'll ask the board's direction and or for support for using these other funds to do this, to do the short range transit plans. I think it's also important to note that Morro Bay, SoCo Transit, and the Rural Dial-A Ride programs completed short range transit plan in 2019. This part of the scope of work on this project will be to incorporate those into it as well, so that we're really trying to sort of compare apples to apples as we move forward. Next slide, please. Obviously, the majority of our work has been focused on communicating the needs of our agency, or the understanding the needs of the riders, but also communicating the restrictions we have on the services that we can provide. So a lot of our work is memos to employees, putting information on the buses for our riders, on our website for the riders, and other social media. I also show here, this is a pin that we developed. So once an employee gets the vaccination, they can wear this on their shirt. And again, that's a marketing opportunity for riders, so they see that the driver is, has been safely vaccinated. In fact, when we came up with this idea, we talked to a company to develop, and they were so excited about it, they're trying to market it to other people. So we're innovators there. Next step, please. Our next slide. This is a great. There's a link in the board packet. The county does a newsletter on COVID-19. They focused one of their issues on our work. Because they know that we can provide transportation for people who are very vulnerable, we operate service door-to-door using the runabout for persons over 75 years old. So we've been doing that since they became eligible a few weeks ago. And we were honored, and Brian did a great job communicating some great messages about the RTA and how we're tied into the community. So we're working right now with folks who are low-income, who are 65 and older, and have no other way to get there. Obviously, if they're runabout eligible, we'll provide the transportation. But some folks, particularly in more remote areas that's outside of our service area, really have no other option. So we're working very closely with the vaccination task force. We're launching another outreach effort with Promontorius to work with that population. So I think it's a good way to work with the community. Next slide, please. The other thing that, again, you know, a lot of our communications are about the 6-foot physical distancing that really requires us to reduce the capacity on a 40-foot bus that could carry 50 passengers, including standees, today can carry 10 to 15. And that's just, it's a significant impact on us. Part of that is communicating to the school districts. As you know, we've been working with them for weeks and weeks here, since the pandemic began, really, but a really more focused effort in the last few weeks here as the schools are starting to open up. And really, our market is junior high school kids and older, and those schools aren't open yet. The majority of the campuses aren't. The bottom line is, with these capacity constraints, we are not going to be able to provide the same level of service that we could before the pandemic. And we've communicated that very clearly with the school districts. We're offering, you know, with parent groups, if they want to talk with us, we'll do a Zoom meeting with them to help explain what the issues are. So if your jurisdiction is somebody contacts you, please send them to us. We'll be happy to set up a workshop and provide that information. But really, there is a potential risk of leaving folks behind. It's you know, not just students, but others as well. But as we start to emerge and open the schools, I think we're going to see more and more of that becoming a problem. Next slide, please. We conducted a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant-led effort. It was completed back in December. We still haven't received the draft report yet. They're pretty busy too, but we'd hoped to bring that to this meeting, but we weren't able to. Our plan is to bring it to the executive committee in April and then to your board in May. I also wanted to mention consent agenda item A8, we We adopted the COVID-19 prevention plan. As part of doing that, that OSHA required effort, we looked at our injury our illness and injury prevention plan and realized it's a little bit old. So we want to update that, and we'll provide a updated plan to the April executive committee meeting for inclusion at the next meeting. Next slide, Tanya. Here's a snapshot of where we are. Fixed route ridership it's been pretty consistent. You know, about 60% down on both fixed route and the runabout. Productivity, we provide some information in the graphs that really show the stark hit that we took when COVID hit and the ridership declines that we saw. Remember, productivity is the number of riders per hour of service. So it's a really good look at the input and the output of the service. Capital expenses were through 58.3. So through 7 months of the year, we're a little bit below 50%. Again, we're not running the express services, so that allows us to save some additional funding. And then the other real metric that I like to look at besides productivity is the fare box recovery ratio. Obviously, running fare free for so long and then operating this interim cash fare where it's 50 cents per ride or 25% if you're elderly, disabled, or youth, it's hit our fare box obviously very, very impactfully. Fare box recovery ratio standard is 20% in our strategic business plan. You see we're at 2.5%. Some transit agencies still have not implemented a fare, and they're obviously at zero. So we're all struggling with this. That obviously hits our subsidy per passenger trip, not having the ability to carry as many people, and then not having a fare really hits us hard. And those numbers there are stark, and they're not surprisingly high, but it's still a very kind of takes your breath away how expensive it is to operate the service when we can't operate it at its full efficiency. So with that, our staff recommendation. Oh, I'm sorry, we have one more here. So what's still facing us? We're still faced with this issue of this tipping point. At some point, we're going to have a tipping point. We've talked with the rideshare. They have a guaranteed ride home program. One of our ideas here is that they have cards that our drivers can give to a passenger, and they can use Uber or taxi cab or some other way to get that to finish that trip. There is some capacity in that program. It hasn't been fully utilized the last few years, so there's an ability for us to do that as sort of a last minute. The real challenge is, though, if a bus comes and can't take you to work, you're not going to be able to get an Uber in time to get you there. And in some of the more remote parts of the county, when we're operating these long inner city trips, we're going to leave some folks behind. And, we're limited by the number of buses we can't, you know, we're down essentially 20% of our capacity. We don't have five times as many buses to put out there. So we're doing the best we can to see where we're following where the capacity issues are. And we're going to increase those services as needed to try to avoid overcrowding the buses. But at some point, we're going to have a tipping point. This morning we've thankfully moved down to the red tier. That may increase our demand. More and more people might feel comfortable to going out again. And I think we're going to see more of this happening. So we're trying to be as agile as we can, and we're going to communicate any changes we have to implement with the public. And with that, the staff recommendation is to accept this as an information item, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. See if there's any questions. Andy Pease has her hand up first.
Thank you so much. First, just a comment on the COVID-19, the prevention plan. Thank you from our staff. They thought it was really well done and were able to grab a few new ideas for our own slow transit. So thank you for that. And then going back to the capacity, I'm wondering if you have a sense as far as kind of bracketing the time frame. You know, we're talking about everybody vaccinated in the country by the end of May. Is there a marker about when we can start letting people closer together? Is that CDC tied, or is it tied to the state and the tiers? What's kind of our long-term projection? And I say that because I think that will help with, as we communicate with folks, like, this is this situation for X amount of anticipated time, and then we'll be able to, I think if people know what the long-term plan is, they're more apt to be patient with current inconvenience.
That's a great question, Director Pease. So we're working with our state transit associations to ask the California Department of Public Health to take another look at the 6-foot physical distancing on a bus. We're implementing scrubbers on the buses, which clean the air. So any air that comes into the vehicle or that recirculates will be clean, like you have on airplanes. We've already put up a lot of different other things that protect riders. We've got hand sanitizers on the vehicles. We we have the distancing requirements of masks. There's a lot of things we're doing that we believe we should try to relax that. I'm not willing to put our agency on the line by implementing our own rule that defies those. But we've asked our state association has asked the Department of Public Health to follow the state of Oregon. State of Oregon is using a 3-foot physical distancing requirement, which doubles the capacity where we are now. It's still not 50, but it helps. The issue is they've required the same things we're already doing: hand sanitizing, masks, and cleaning the vehicle. They do require the vehicles to be cleaned more often. And if we are able to get there, I'm going to have to hire more people, at least temporarily, to come in and sanitize the vehicles. We have sanitizers; we do them every day. But they require during the day. You do a couple other cleanings during the day. Even though the science seems to show that my reading of the science is that the transmission tends to be by air and not by touch. So, but still, if that allows us to do that, it's a great way for us not to have to maybe to avoid some of that problem. The bottom line is we're following CDC and California Department of Public Health requirements. And I don't believe that the county, in talking with them, they're not willing to either make a lessen that, or decrease the that physical distancing from 6 to 3.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Bright.
Thank you. Thank you for that report. There was a lot of information in a short period of time. So I wanted to ask you about the free rides to the vaccines. I've assisted a couple of our seniors in getting their vaccination appointments. So I'd love to be able to help them as well if they have trouble getting to their appointments. So would they call the runabout? Is that how they would access that service?
Yeah, so we work with the county. Their website is as soon as you get into the portal. As soon as you're eligible, you can get into the portal, and then it says there, if you have trouble getting there, call this phone number. The challenge we've had is, especially with some language barriers, is getting that through. So Promontoris has come up with a program where they've been given a slice off of the people who are eligible, the appointments for people who are eligible, and they will actually make the appointment. We're hoping to have a workshop with their schedule, with Promontory schedulers, where they contact us the time they're doing that to make sure we have the capacity to provide that trip. I don't want somebody getting their appointment at, say, 10 o'clock on Tuesday. They call us up afterwards, and we're completely full at that time. We can only do it at 11 or 9 or something like that. So we're trying to get at the front end of it, so we have a warm transfer of a person, and we jointly schedule that. That's how, granular we're getting on this, trying to make this thing work, because we believe it's an important thing, and we have some good allies in helping us get that, to minimize those barriers. So the real bottom line is, if you're working with somebody and you're trying to help them get a schedule, contact us first. Talk to our schedulers and see if we can help arrange that. We know where the resources are to help get those folks who need additional help, how to get that done.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other board questions for Jeff on this executive director's report? Seeing none, we'll go to public comment on this and see if there's any public comment on the executive director's report.
Eric here.
Go ahead, Mr. Green.
Thank you. Yes. First, thank you. Excellent report. And I continue to suggest, if we get an ability to do the 3-foot distancing, that we start out with doing it behind the rear door and still leaving the 6 feet in front so that people who feel vulnerable can still keep the 6 feet. But we can start ramping up the capacity that way, and hopefully we will pull out of this thing in stages as hopefully this year as it goes on. Relative to the vaccine rides, I presume the reference to the seniors is simply a reference to who's eligible now, and that people of any age, once it becomes available to people of any age, if they have no alternative, that it would be, the free ride would be available to them, to whatever site is closest. That can be clarified. And I think it would be good to share this information with city managers so that when questions come up from the public at city council meetings and things like that about houseless people and other people and how they could possibly get.
Public comment on the executive director's report.
Eric here.
Go ahead, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Yes. First, thank you. Excellent report. And I continue to suggest if we get an ability to do the 3-foot distancing, that we start out with doing it behind the rear door and still leaving the 6 feet in front so that people who feel vulnerable can still keep the 6 feet. But we can start ramping up the capacity then in stages as hopefully to the vaccination, that information is at hand and can be given in responses to comment. And then finally, I'd just like to ask whether RTAC, depending on the timing of it, whether RTAC will have a chance to see the equity and inclusion report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate it. Any other public comment? Thank you. See none. This is a receive and file, and I'm going to do this without objection. This report is received and filed, and we'll be moving on to the next item. I don't see any objections. So we will. Oh, sorry, Pete, did you want to say something?
Yes, I did. Pete Rogers, Slocog Executive Director. Jeff and I talked about him adding this to the Executive Director's Report, and it's something I mentioned at the last Slocog meeting, and it is a proposal in the Federal Register by the Office of Management and Budget to change the statistical area definition from a population of 50,000 to 100,000. And I just wanted to mention that Jeff and I are working closely with the California Transit Association. They've agreed to write a letter on our behalf opposing this change. We're sort of worried about the down-the-road repercussions of changing the urbanized areas, which would change funding formulas. This not only affects transportation, but it would affect community development block grant programs, medical reimbursement rates for the hospitals. So I just want to let you know we're tracking that issue, and we'll be keeping you informed, and it'll be an item on the SLOCOG agenda in April, on April 7th. Thank you.
Mr. President, if I could mention, Pete, I'm glad you mentioned that. That is an important issue for us, and I forgot to get to that. I apologize. We're also, Omar McPherson on our staff serves on the board of the CAL Act for the California Association of Coordinated Transit. That agency, as well as the California Transit Association, both of those agencies have agreed to submit a letter of protest on that. So thank you, Pete.
You bet. Any board questions on that item there? Mr. Strong.
Yes, and I apologize to both Pete and Jeff on this, but I've already received a notice from my national connection that has been approved and accepted as OMB's change. However, there is a serious question as to whether it will have any effect upon transportation funding from the federal agency. The problem with that is how the state accepts it and how the state uses it. So I think a lot of our effort has to be now shifted to making sure the state does not take a census thing and apply it to transportation. Just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other board questions on this item? Any public comment on this, on Pete and Jeff were talking about?
Thanks for staying on top of it.
There it is. Thank you very much, Mr. Greening. Okay, without objection, this report is received and filed, and we're moving on now to item B2, which is the update on the bus maintenance facility construction. Jeff, it's all yours.
Thank you. Tanya, you want to bring that slide up, please? Next slide there. There we go. So I'm not sure how it shows up in your screen, but you can see the crane. We've actually got some real things to report here. Some real concrete, probably a bad pun, but we've got some good concrete evidence of the work we're doing here. Next slide, please. So we're starting the countdown as of February, or as of March 1st. We have to be out of the current facility that I'm sitting in right now on February 28th, 2022. So we're less than a year out now. Wanted to give an update on where we are with the facility. We've processed 18 invoices from our designer, who continues to help out with contract administration. That's Stantec Architecture. 10 invoices with our construction manager, totaling $450,000. We should get our 7th invoice today from Specialty Construction, but through last month we've incurred $4.8 million of costs on the construction. I do want to mention that. We had our kickoff finally with Federal Transit Administration and their contractor for project management oversight on the project. PMO is something that is required of major capital projects over $100 million or any TIFIA-funded programs. So ours, even though it has $13 million of TIFIA funding, we fall under this much higher level of inspection. So far, it's been going great. They've reviewed our processes, our invoices. We're doing this in advance of our first drawdown of TIFIA funds. We've got about 2 months left of local and grant funds before we need to access the TIFIA funds. So I'm working with them now early, so we're not at a cliff and have to really scramble to get the process in place was good. So we're through that. Next slide, please. Significant milestones, and there's a typo that should say concrete masonry units. That's what we're building the walls of the maintenance facility on. And if you drive by or go by the facility now, look over the fence, you'll see it's getting really tall. It's 27 feet at the top of that CMU walls, and that's being completed. That should be done next week. At the end of next week, they should be cleaned up and moved on. I've also, I do want to mention that we've got a lot of great local subcontractors on the project. The general contractor is also local in the county, so we're moving right along. One of the challenges that we experienced here is that the CMU walls are the critical path for the project, meaning that's really what a lot of the other next steps are dependent upon. And a couple of the employees at for the sub contracted COVID, and so they've been down on staff, and this is the first real delay we've had on the project is working on this. The general contractor moved up other things that could be done outside of that work, so the structural steel was delivered a couple weeks early, and it's been erected for the administration side. You can even see that from the road again, and I'll show some pictures here in a second. The next real big step after the CMU is done is the roof. Once we get the roof in, we can really start doing a lot of the interior work and moving the project along. Several of you have accepted my offer to come take a tour of the facility. It's still available. So if you'd like to see it, please give me a call or email me and we can set up a time. We'll provide PPE, including a hard hat and other safety things. Next slide here. You remember we had a big storm event, and this was a real test for our project. This is we had 8 inches of rain in the county, more in other places. You can see these pictures here in the upper part here. This is Lake RTA, we call it. This was the stormwater retention ponds, and picture was taken a little bit early. It almost got to the brim. And this was done before the tie-in to the system, so we had no outlet for the water. The water stayed on site, and the contractor did a great job of bringing subs in and finishing up all the base work. So we came out of this very significant storm very well. This really could have been a problem. We lost four days of construction because it took a while for the concrete to dry up before they could put more brick on. The bottom right here picture of your screen there is a picture of San Luis Creek. The city did a great job of clearing the debris out of that and making sure that it wouldn't back up. That was the cause of the 1978 or something flood. It backed up to that bridge. bridge, and the water overflowed it and went, into where our property is, but it also went over Highway 101. So did a great job of preparing for that, and I think we came through this relatively unscathed. So good job to our contractors. You also note in the bottom left over here, the green building is Capslow. So that's our neighbors to the right, to give you some perspective. That'll be important in another picture here. Next slide, please. So here we are. This is on the upper right, and gosh, it's pretty small. You really can't see it very well, but the building in the background, the green building, is Capslow on the backside. What we're looking at here on the upper left is the steel structure for the administration side, and that's kind of shown throughout. You can see the crane bringing in some of the structure that's in the roof part of the project. So again, we're moving right along. We're still expecting the project to be substantially completed in early December, which gives us time to move in, punch list, and get out of the project or complete the project before the end of February. The current contract calls for February 5th. But the contractors asked for a small extension based on some of these problems they've encountered, but we haven't accepted it. We're still standing by the February 5th, and we do have liquidated damages if they're unable to make the that date. But they've been great to work with. I don't think we're going to have to get there. They've done a great job, like I said, of shifting resources around to move to the next step. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about the project.
Okay, Mr. Paulding, go right ahead.
Thank you, Chair Prashan. I just wanted to make a quick comment on that. I appreciate the report, Jeff. And I like the fact that we're looking at, obviously there's the contract that would allow liquidated damages if they miss contract completion, but if we can work with the contractor and be proactive, that's obviously much better. So I'm glad that you're looking at that, and hopefully we can just negotiate that on site and it doesn't need to go into that. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Jeff before we go to public comment on this item? Seeing none, then we're going to go to public comment. Mr. Greening.
Yeah, good work. And we all hope for rain, but I guess we're lucky we haven't had a whole lot of it this year, but we continue to hope for rain. Anyway, thank you for the good work and staying on this.
Great. Thank you. Any additional comments from the board? Seeing none, then without objection, this item's received and filed, and I don't see any objections, so we are moving on. Next item is the action agenda item, and so we have the fiscal year 21-22 budget assumptions, and so our Deputy Director, CFO, Tanya Arnold, has the report on this.
Good morning, board members. Tanya Arnold, RTA Deputy Director and CFO. I will try to speak loudly so you can hear me. I apologize for the soft volume. So included in your agenda is the budget assumptions for fiscal year 21-22. This year provides a lot of challenges as you all have been facing. So the staff recommends the budget assumptions as kind of the first step in developing the budget. Again, we'll be developing a two-year budget for operating and a five-year capital budget, with the first year for adoption and the out years just for advisory purposes only. This has been extremely helpful for staff as we work to develop funding for the capital program especially. And then I believe it helps the local jurisdictions identify the LTF that might be needed in the out years. But as always, this year has been especially challenging as we try to identify all those different funding issues that we're dealing with. So the key issues that we're working on. So issue number one, not a surprise to anyone, I'm sure, is related to COVID. So we have a lot of items that kind of fall under this key issue. One being liability costs, and I'll go into more detail later on in the presentation, monitoring our runabout costs. As Jeff mentioned earlier, you know, we're limiting the capacity on those vehicles. So a very expensive service that we were really working hard to try to get efficiencies with, has become even more difficult to get those efficiencies. So that is something that we're monitoring, especially we are not conducting travel training to try to get those passengers to use the fixed route, which is obviously much less expensive, or to do in-person assessments. So as we come out of COVID, we're hoping to roll those items back in and really try to curb some of those escalations that we're seeing in the runabout costs. And then staffing and retention, in particular with the bus operator classification, this is something that we're really keeping an eye on. We're hopeful now that our employees are eligible for the vaccine, that those that might have been on the fence about joining and their exposure to the public might be more interested in that classification. The second key issue is negotiating or extending our current collective bargaining agreement with the Teamsters Local 986. As of right now, our agreement with them expires at the end of this calendar year. So that is something that is high on the radar for this coming fiscal year. Key issue number three is continuing efforts to implement the zero emission bus technology. As we've discussed with the board at prior meetings, that technology right now has a more limited range than what our current vehicles, how we're using them. And then there are much more costly. We're hoping that some of the cost for the vehicles would be offset by the maintenance cost moving forward, but it is something that we are keeping in mind and making sure we're implementing the proper infrastructure as well, which is part of our the next item. So the construction of the long-term planned bus maintenance facility, we are including in that facility the infrastructure to do electrical charging for our vehicles. And it'll start with a base amount of charging, and then we will hopefully with time expand that infrastructure at that location. But it's being set up with the keeping in mind that we will have that future need. Key item number five is addressing the final funding gap for the CalPERS liability, and we'll get back to that at the board meeting when we discuss the budget. Item number five and six are both kind of related. It's related to some of the local
Kenya, you have frozen.
She has frozen. Maybe I can take over here and until she can get logged back in. Okay. So obviously, she's talked about some of the let me back up. One of the things that I wanted to mention is that COVID-19 is going to intertwine itself through each one of these issues. The long planned bus maintenance facility, you know, it'll be completed this fiscal year, and it'll so that item goes away. Tanya, you back?
I am back. Sorry.
All right, go for it.
with three kids trying to do school remote, bandwidth is kind of limited. Sorry. So I'm not sure. I was talking about funding. I'm not sure if you guys heard that portion. So LTF and STA are the local match for a lot of our capital projects, especially. So as we, you know, are concerned with those funding sources going down, so we are keeping a really close eye on those funding sources. Preliminary information is positive at this point. There's not like vast increases, but there's no more projected decreases in this funding source. So when we did budget amendments previously, we had taken into account, for example, the reduction in STA funding that we amended for in the fall. And that reduction we also took into consideration for the future year, assuming that reduction would continue. So we are trying as much as possible to be conservative with our numbers so we don't shock the jurisdictions with a potential increase in our needs for LTF. And then the final key issue that we have addressed in this budget assumptions is the fuel costs. As you know, fuel costs continue to remain rather volatile. So we've seen some increases recently. We are going to stay with the $3.30 that we budgeted for last year for diesel fuel, which includes the DEF additive for emissions. but it is something that we are keeping a close eye on. And then the staff report includes a number of items. So I always like to take, you know, the stage for just a second when we do the budget assumptions and the budget presentation to kind of remind the board what the mission and objectives of the organization are. So the mission statement for RTA, the mission of the RTA to provide safe, reliable, and effective transportation services that improve and enhance the quality of life for the citizens and visitors to San Luis Obispo County. And that really transitions as we head into the first objective and revenue impact that's included in the staff report. And that is to maintain service hours and levels to meet the standards of productivity and demand of our customers and communities through effective and efficient delivery of the RTA core services. So that's a really key item for us. And we did do the service reduction for this fiscal year, and we are still well under that without running those express trips. And so that is something we will keep in mind as we move forward in those impacts. We continue to monitor the impacts of the interim fare. As Jeff mentioned earlier, right now we are running an interim fare. So we will monitor that. And when the cities start to open back up and determine an appropriate time to re-implement our normal fare structure, our last fare increase was in December of 2017. So it was kind of on our radar for 2021 to look at that. But with COVID, we will likely be delaying any reviews of our fare structure. As always, the budget will include a separate silo for the county services, South County services, and Paso Robles services. So you'll see that as we move through the budget process in May. Our federal funding is a big piece of our budget. So for the current fiscal year, we've really maximized the use of CARES funds. So those CARES funds were part of the stimulus that was passed in March of 2020. And those funds do not require a local match, which is wonderful. But our normal federal funds do require a local match of 50-50 for operating and 20% for most of our capital items. So that's something we are keeping an eye on. We did get the federal apportionments for the current fiscal year, and they are in line with what we were projecting, which is great news. And we hope that continues because the FAST Act is something we're watching the renewal of and the impacts of that. And then, you know, should a shortfall arise from our funding, and we'll work with the jurisdictions and this board to determine how we address that funding shortfall. But as always, we use local funds as the last item. So we'll use everything we can get and then use that as the last piece. And then something that we've discussed at prior meetings, and now that consolidation has been completed with South County Transit, I'm looking at the reserve policy again. We do have a policy right now for employment practices that does have a $50,000 self-insured retention. So if we were to have a claim under that policy, we don't have a self-insured retention reserve to cover that. It would come out of our contingencies. So it's something that we are looking at. And also with our general liability, if we were to increase and have a self-insured retention, basically a deductible on those policies, the impact of our premiums and how we would fund potentially a reserve related to that. So as Jeff mentioned earlier, we're working with other transit operators as well. We're working on that joint grant application for a joint SRTP. If that moves forward, it would, you know, really help the region evaluate opportunities for funding the different needs for service in the region. And one of those needs, we're actually working with the city of San Luis Obispo right now on a low-no grant application for electric vehicles. So Any new funding opportunities that arise, we will do every effort that we can, which might include a very short April board meeting in order to adopt a resolution to apply for those funds. But any opportunity that arises for additional funding, we will take advantage of it. And then related to expense impacts, the big one is related to insurance, as I mentioned earlier. So we have a number of different insurance policies, the biggest being our workers' compensation and our general liability policies. So with regard to our general liability policy, we are anticipating increases in that policy. We'll get a better feel for that in March at the end of this month. So both Jeff and I serve on committees that will be reviewing those preliminary estimates. And we have heard some preliminary numbers, but they've been very general at this point in time. But we did have a significant loss in February of 2019 that we know is going to be impacting our premiums. But otherwise, our safety record has been very good. So, but we're continuing to monitor the impact of that significant loss. And then related to workers' compensation, some good news. You know, we've had fewer losses, and we've been able to close out some of our losses quicker than we had anticipated. And that has really been favorable to our workers' compensation premiums. And so the increase that was projected based on kind of our historical increases for the fiscal year 21-22, and the estimate that came in January of 21 for fiscal year 21-22 is less than what we were projecting, which is great news. We're really excited to see kind of the fruits of the efforts. But we are keeping in mind one of the big drivers of workers' compensation is wages. That's really what it's driven off of. And that's the exposure base for a lot of it. And as the minimum wage has increased, we've seen our premiums increase. But keeping our losses in check has really helped related to that. And then property insurance, with the significant losses in the property insurance market, namely due to the wildfires, and we are expecting some increases there. And then the last piece of insurance is related to health insurance. We did take a slightly higher increase than we were projecting for the fiscal year, or calendar year, 21. But the we were able to maintain in budget related to that. And we are anticipating a 6% increase for calendar year 22. And we have talked to our broker, and they do anticipate that that is a reasonable budget estimate for that. Related to staffing expenses, so as I mentioned, our collective bargaining agreement expires at the end of this year. So we'll be working with our union to help us emerge in a fiscally responsible manner through the pandemic. We are anticipating our full-time equivalent positions will remain the same. The makeup will be slightly different. With consolidation and some of the efficiencies that we're working through, we are anticipating moving some part-time, you know, reducing the number of part-time and potentially increasing the number of full-times in order to provide more efficient service. So that is, we're working through that. And then an annual inflationary increase based on the December 2019 to December 2020 of 1.5% will be included in the budget for implementation in July of 2021. The operations supervisor classification is the exception to that for all of our non-union employees. That will be implemented in January of 2022 to coincide with the bus operator classification in order to remain equity in that between those classifications. And then the final piece related to staffing expenses, at the September 2020 meeting, the board recommended implementing the increase in the contribution to the San Luis Obispo County Pension Trust in July of 2021 instead of in January of 2021. So traditionally, those increases have been covered fully by the agency, and this budget will assume that pickup will continue. And then included in the I'm trying to advance the slides. It doesn't seem to want to. There we go. So included in, is the budget calendar for your consideration. The next big presentation to this board would be at the May 5th board meeting for adoption of the 21-22 budget. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so thank you very much, Tanya, for that. And we'll see if there's any board questions. Andy Pease, you're up first.
Thank you for the presentation. My only question is in terms of that regional coordination for trip efficiencies, short-range transit planning. So that's hoping to be funded by the Caltrans grant. If that grant isn't successful, are we going to try to accomplish that work within our regular budget, or does it get scaled back, or how will that work if the grant is not successful?
So I'll answer that. So we have, regionally, we have 5307 federal funds that we can also use to help fund those type of projects. And when we submit the grant application, we don't tell them that, but we do use that as our kind of our backup plan if those funds are not approved through the Caltrans grant process. So we do have a kind of a backup placeholder from the jurisdictions and those federal funds to in lieu of the Caltrans grant. But yeah, we would continue with that planning process.
Okay, so that.
Okay, so thank you very much, Tanya, for that. And we'll see if there's any board questions. Andy Pease, you're up first.
Thank you, Finn. In terms of that regional work goes forward anyway. Okay, sounds important to do that. Thank you. That was it.
Any other board questions? Mr. Paldy.
Thank you, Board Chair. Thank you, Tanya, for the comprehensive report. One budget item indicated was the zero emission bus fleet, and I know that that has been an issue in terms of feasibility. Jeff, I was just wondering if you could provide an update as to the status on that.
So we recognize that the current technology, there's not a vehicle out there that can meet the needs for Route 10 or for Route 9. So Route 9 up to Paso and Route 10 down to Santa Maria from San Luis Obispo. Just there's too many hills, and it's too long of a distance, freeway miles. But Route 12 is one place where we could start implementing that that program. And, you know, all indications are that the cost per mile of an electric bus is significantly less than a diesel-powered bus. So that would provide some benefit to us. And if we can get outside funding to make up the difference in the capital side of buying a diesel bus versus an electric, that should reduce operating costs. But getting to full system is going to be a problem for us. There's no question about that. Either we're going to have to top the vehicles up with a charging station in a transit center in Paso and one in Santa Maria. So at this point, we're not suggesting we look at anything beyond the Route 9 and Route 10. For South County Transit, it can work. And for Paso Express, it can work. So we'll be advocating on the behalf of those agencies, trying to find funding for that as well. And it works in slow transit for most of their routes. It's just really the long range, over the hill, high freeway speed routes are going to have the biggest problem.
Okay, so we're taking a phased approach.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, appreciate the update. Thanks.
Okay, any other board questions? Seeing none, we'll go to public comment. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Excellent work. And RTAC did approve an earlier version of this and looks forward to looking at the actual budget itself next month. In terms of right now in Washington, D.C., there's a sort of a moving target of a stimulus bill. I guess it's in the Senate and it's likely to go to conference and so on. The last stimulus bill, we were not able to take advantage of the transit portion, apparently because we are not a self-help county. Do we have any idea, or is there any way to have an impact on the nature of this stimulus bill as it's moving forward? And then the other question, which kind of goes back to the news about the 100,000 new limit for the standard metropolitan statistical areas, are the jurisdictions aware of it, and are they ready to respond in their own legislative platforms relative to the state? Anyway, those are some thoughts, but I very much look forward to the budget itself and hopefully better circumstances ahead.
Mr. Straw, do you want to address that?
Well, real quickly, this just is hot off the press. We just got news from the state that the county. So we didn't receive any of the CARISA funds. We call them. It's the Coronavirus Relief and Response Supplemental Appropriations Act, or CRISA, because we don't operate real high levels of service in comparison to other agencies around the state, around the country. So we were excluded from that amount as a direct response to or direct allocation. The state did get some CRISA funds, and the state and the county, it looks like $1.5 million is available for rural services, so that will help the rural services that RTA operates, as well as Morro Bay and you know, things like Napomo Dial-A-Ride, those sorts of programs will be eligible for this funding. So we're going to keep a close eye on that. It was just announced 5 minutes ago, and I just brought it up. But we don't know about the next round, if there's going to be in this $1.9 billion package that's being voted, I think, by the U.S. Senate today, or at least being considered today. We haven't heard any direct numbers on that. We've had some overall numbers, but no ideas about direct allocations. Although they have increased the amount, from what I understand, the percentage of operating costs in 2018 that are eligible. So we may get some funding from that, but we haven't heard any real numbers yet.
Okay, Mr. Chair, yes, I'll make a couple of comments. City of Paso Robles is definitely aware, and I hope the other cities are making their people aware also. And we are working on it in a number of ways. I'm working on it through CalCOG, where I'm the state vice president. And also, I'm meeting next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. with Pete Buttigieg. And we will be talking primarily just about city fund, transportation funding in that meeting. But it opens the doors for additional meetings through regional government for some of these other factors. So it's a matter of doing it in stages. This is how it works. You know, you carve it up in little pieces and you take a piece at a time. And we're continuing to work on it in each one of those pieces as they come available. Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment or board comment?
Ed Wagg, I was going to mention Pismo Beach. We've also alerted our federal lobbyists about the MSA issue.
Thank you, Ed. Anything else? Okay. Bring it back now and ask. This is a roll call vote. So is there a motion to approve and move forward with the budget assumptions?
Ed Wagg, I move approval.
Second.
Mr. Wagg.
Mr. Strong seconds.
Mr. Strong. Heather, I'm coming to you next time.
All right. So it was a race.
We'll ask Tanya to do a roll call on this item.
Board Member Waggy.
Yes.
Board Member Strong.
Yes.
Board Member Arnold.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Compton.
Yes.
Board Member Davis.
Yes.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Board Member Paulding.
Muted, but seems to be saying yes.
I think he's frozen. Board Member. So.
He does look frozen. Board Member Pease.
Yes.
Board President Pichon.
Yes.
And Paulding was yes.
Okay. There we go.
Thank you.
Motion passes, and so we're moving on now to item C2, which is the strategic business plan results and planned update, and Mr. Straw will be doing the staff report.
Okay, thank you. Quickly, we've got item C2, which is the strategic business plan, and we're also seeking some direction on moving forward. So the strategic business plan, next slide there, Tanya, was the last one was adopted in 2017. Just as a reminder, strategic business plan includes our vision elements, as well as our mission, and then strategies on how to achieve that mission. The last one was developed in 2017, following the adoption of our short-range transit plan in 2016. So provided some guidance on some additional or some changes to some of the standards we use for measuring ourselves against our performance against these standards. So you see up on your screen here, we've got seven areas that we measure ourselves, and then under each one of those, there's several sort of elements to our goals within those areas. But I do want to mention that the strategic business plan it officially sort of expired at the end of 2020, and our goal originally was to bring in the fall of 2020 some suggested changes to the SBP, some refinements based on some changes that have been happening, some trends that had been occurring prior to COVID, and then COVID hit, and obviously that really put a monkey wrench in a lot of these. In particular, there are a couple standards that are, there's just, it's going to be impossible for us to meet those with the restrictions on the number of riders we can have, as well as our interim cash program. So maybe we can go to the next slide, Tanya. This is something I've provided to you in the past. It's a dashboard kind of snapshot of where we are on those quantifiable measures that the standard as well as our results. As you can see, anything in red is we didn't achieve it. Anything in green, we did or exceeded it. So the top three up there are all about productivity, riders per hour, you know, boardings per hour. And obviously a standard of 22, we resulted less than half of that. We've been talking about how our ridership is down so much. Farebox recovery ratio is the other one. We'll never meet it with a interim cash fare and restrictions on riders. So we're at 12.7%. I'm sorry, that's a mistake. It should be 2.7%. I apologize for that. Preventable collisions, we're operating fewer miles per year. We did have a collision about a month ago that we're tracking very closely, and we've had a couple small scrapes. We count every collision as preventable if it is preventable. So even if a bus is pulling into a bus stop and the mirror slaps the bus stop sign, that's considered a collision, and we count those because we believe those small ones could lead to big ones. So we want to do what we can to prevent those. In any case, we're not going to ever achieve those standards in red up there on the top of the page, or farebox recovery ratio. So what I'm suggesting, and your report goes into detail about each one of those standards and how we achieved it. We also provided in there for the South County Transit Committee folks, how South County did to wrap up their existence, if you will, through the end of December when they consolidated in the RTA. I wanted to show those numbers as well. But what I'm suggesting here is, because we don't know how we're going to, even when we're going to emerge from this pandemic, we have the opportunity to do another short-range transit plan. My suggestion is that that this board direct us to continue using the same standards until we can update them with more reasonable numbers as we emerge. Maybe bring back some initial kind of dialing the dials just a little bit, tweaking them a little bit to come up with some new standards we can use until we get the short range transit plan in early 2022. So Tanya, on the next slide, what we're suggesting is receive the SBB results through 2020 and then direct us to present updated SBP metrics in early 2022 with the goal of adopting it in summer 22. If we get the grant from Sustainable Communities to Caltrans, or if we use 5307, one of the first things we're going to have the consultant do is look at all of our strategic business plans. All the transit agencies have something similar to this. If they don't have an exact SBP, they do have goals and objectives and missions and those sorts of things. We're going to suggest that happen up early as part of the project, and then we can provide those interim results back to the board to help guide us in our vision of excellent transit. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, I don't want to get into the details of how we did. I think it's well presented in the staff report. So I really want to talk about just how we will look forward into the future.
Great. Any board questions? I don't see any. No hands raised. Okay, so we're going to go to public comment on this item. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Yeah, excellent work on this. I don't have any particular comments except to recognize that, yes, these are not circumstances in which we meet them all, but I very, very much appreciate the effort of the entire staff to meet them as well as they can. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any additional public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board and to Mayor Moreno to make a motion.
Thank you to Director Straw. Well, yeah, it makes sense. So good job. And thank you for the thoroughness in the report. And with that, I will move staff's recommendation.
Is there a second? Who was the second?
Whoever. I did.
It's Strong. Fred Strong seconds Mayor Moreno's motion. And we will go to Tanya to do a roll call vote, please.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Board Member Strong.
Aye.
Board Member Arnold.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Compton.
Yes.
Board Member Davis.
Yes.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Paulding.
Yes.
Board Member Pease.
Yes.
Board Member Waggy.
Yes.
And President Pichon.
Yes. Okay, we are moving on now to item C3. That's the fiscal year 2021 operating and capital budget amendment number 4. And Tanya, I think you have the direction and the staff report on this.
I do. Thank you very much. So this is board amendment number, budget amendment number 4. I say this jokingly, and it might be the last, but it might not. As part of the COVID relief CARES Act that was passed, in, as I mentioned earlier, in March, there's been some various funding that have come in. This budget amendment really identifies the final piece that's related to the CARES from the rural portion that's allocated by the state of California. And we've worked with SLOCOG because not only is RTA eligible for these funds, but as well as the cities of Morro Bay and then the county services. So phase one of the CARES Act for the 5311 was allocated to Morro Bay and the county. And then this second phase two is being allocated to the RTA for the services that we provide. So, this is one-time act, you know, funding. It's not additional funding that's going to be reoccurring. The huge benefit of these funds is there's no local match required, which has been a big benefit for the agencies. We are proposing in this budget amendment that the savings of the local transportation funds be allocated to reducing the LTF that was in the projected budget for fiscal year 21-22 in order to kind of spread the benefit and lessen the impact of the LTF need in that fiscal year. So this and that savings identified is $989,600, so almost $1 million. So the real big piece, a lot of it's just moving things kind of around with the reduction of the funding need for fiscal year 21-22. Sorry, really struggling with those years. There is one cost increase that's identified in this, that is related to our the ITS system. So there's an information technology system that we have on all the fixed route vehicles. That's been really critical to tell us like how many people have been on the bus, what was the max load. It tells us where the buses are. It gives passengers the ability to text when the next bus will be arriving. It gives them a lot of information. So that contract is renewing. So we did increase our expense to account for that. So that is the one significant change to the budget is related to that expense. So we moved one
capital item from capital to operating. But all in all, that was really the only real significant change to the budget. So there is, for reference, there is a change to the county budget that has been provided to the county for their information. And that's really related to them receiving the CARES Act funds as part of that RTF exchange from the phase one. And with that, the staff recommendation is to adopt budget amendment number 4 as presented. And as a reminder, we're not asking for any additional LTF funds, and we're actually reducing the amount of LTF for the next fiscal year. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any board questions on this item? Seeing none, we'll go to public comment. Mr. Greening?
Thank you, and good work, and I urge approval, and I'm sure the jurisdictions can put the money to good use for whatever transportation purpose is most needed.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board for deliberations and or a motion to approve. Mr. Paulding.
I will move approval of staff's recommendation.
Great. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Strong seconds. Mr. Paulding, Mr. Strong. So we have a motion and a second, and I'll go to the vote. This is a roll call vote, so I'll ask Tanya to call the roll.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Board Member Strong?
Aye.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Bright?
Yes.
Board Member Compton?
Yes.
Board Member Davis?
Yes.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Pease?
Yes.
Vice President Waggy?
Yes.
President Pashaw?
Yes. Motion passes. So now we're moving on to C4, which is a public hearing for disadvantaged business enterprise plan. And I'm going to open this public hearing and ask our Deputy Director, CFO, Tanya Arnold, to present the staff report, please.
Okay. So the RTA originally adopted our disadvantaged business enterprise plan or goal in 2010. And then the most recent update was done in to the overall goal was done in 2015. It's a 3-year goal. And so that goal was expired in October of 2020. So we're working through the process to update that goal. And we worked with FTA to identify some of the projects that are included in the analysis of what we should be setting our goal to. Our current goal for disadvantaged business enterprise is 5.1, and we are proposing that we increase that to 5.5 based on the projects that are identified in the goal-setting methodology and in accordance with FTA guidance. We did a lot of outreach to various community stakeholders. We, at this point in time, we did not receive any feedback related to revising the goal. We did receive some feedback about how to become a disadvantaged business enterprise, and we did a lot of outreach related to that. And so with that, staff is asking that the board authorize the executive director to submit our updated goal methodology to the FTA.
Great. Thank you for that great report. So we'll go back to the board now and see if there's any board questions. I don't see any hands raised, no board questions on this item. So Tanya, could you please read any public comments submitted prior to this meeting?
We did not receive any.
Okay, I'm gonna open up public comment for Mr. Greening.
Yeah, and is there anyone else who wishes to comment?
I don't believe we have anybody else in the public that would like to comment. Just you, Mr. Greening.
All right, thank you. Well, I would urge you to move forward with this. Obviously, over the last year, a lot of businesses that never thought they would be disadvantaged have found themselves very seriously disadvantaged. That being said, I think we can move forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Greening. Any other public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment. I'm also going to close this public hearing, and we're going to go into board deliberations and or a motion to move forward with this recommendation. Okay, I think I saw Mr. Strong.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is a no-brainer. It's a required thing by the federal government. So let's approve it and proceed.
Got it. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Ed Waggy, second.
Mr. Waggy, seconds. Any further discussion? We will go then. Tanya, please call the roll.
Board Member Strong?
Aye.
Vice President Waggy?
Yes.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Bright?
Yes.
Board Member Compton?
Yes.
Board Member Davis?
Yes.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Pauling?
Yes.
Board Member Pease?
Yes.
President Pichon?
Yes. Motion passes on that public hearing, so thank you everybody for that. We're now moving on to the closed session. We have one item. Everybody should have received an email, and I'm looking here, so Tanya sent it out. You sent it out this morning at 8:50 a.m. Everybody should have received it with a conference call phone number. This is not a Zoom call. It's a conference call. And so if you could, please leave this meeting, get on the conference call. We will do our closed session work, and then we will reconvene.
Do you want to take public comment on closed session?
I will. I'm not there.
President Pichon, if I could also describe to the public what you're meeting on.
Oh, certainly. I'm not there yet, but give me one second, Nina.
Okay, all right.
We will be coming back after this closed session to board member comments and then adjournment. Nina, go ahead.
Thank you. Your board will be meeting in closed session with exception to the Brown Act section of the Government Code 54956.9, significant exposure to litigation. And this should take about 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Is there any public comment, Mr. Greening, on this item?
I know nothing about it, so I will leave you to your closed session and thank you all for a very constructive meeting.
Thank you. Okay, with no public comment, I'm going to close public comment on the closed session item, and we are going to go into closed session. If anybody has not received the phone number to dial into, if you could raise your hand and I'll have somebody send it to you right away. Okay? We'll see you in the closed session conference call.
All right, Chair, the floor is yours.
Great, thank you. We'll call this meeting back into order. And Nina, any report out of closed session?
Yes, your board did meet in closed session and no reportable action was taken.
Great, well, thank you very much for that. We're now going to go to board member comments and board reports. You can make any further comments on items on the agenda or items not on the agenda. And you can also update us on regional, national, and statewide meetings that you attended, and that would be directed at Mr. Strong. So, any updates or any updates? Okay, Mr. Strong.
Well, about the only thing, most of my meetings were city, and that would be the NLC meetings. And they were mostly just conference calls at this point in time. We're getting ready for our annual conference, which starts on Sunday. And actually, it starts pretty much on Monday. But on Sunday, that's when I'm meeting with our new Secretary of Transportation. And that will be with our executive team from the Transportation Policy Committee of National League of Cities. And I believe that probably the National Counties Association is going to meet with him also. He is really looking for local engagement on everything, and he's also a strong advocate of direct allocation of funds from the federal government without going through the states. So we have high hopes that we can get some things accomplished with him in charge over there.
Outstanding. Thank you, Fred.
And Andy has a question perhaps of me. I don't know.
Nope.
No, okay.
He has a board member comment. Ms. Pease.
Thank you. I know the item went by pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%, and I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise. It really does make a difference, and I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by
pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%, and I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise. It really does make a difference, and I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
Pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%, and I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise. It really does make a difference, and I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
Pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%. And I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this, in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise. It really does make a difference, and I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
Pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%. And I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this, in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise. It really does make a difference, and I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
Pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%. And I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this, in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise. It really does make a difference, and I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
by pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%. And I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this, in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise, it really does make a difference. And I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
Pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%. And I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this, in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise, it really does make a difference. And I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?
Pretty quickly in terms of the DBE goal and the 5.5%. And I just wanted to say at a kind of a macro level that I really appreciate the work on that and the outreach. It really does make a difference as a business owner in this, in a lot of built environment infrastructure kinds of projects, that the kinds of outreach and support to encourage greater participation of DBE, whether it's veterans or women's owned or minority owned business enterprise, it really does make a difference. And I appreciate this agency's effort in doing that proactive outreach.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any other further comments by the board?